Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism for Thursday,
Love Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism for Thursday, November 1st, 2012. I'm your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, and I'm coming to you live from Windsor Mill, Maryland, where the Dynamics of Colorism will come to you every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Before we start our show this evening, I think it's important that we stop to remember everyone who's been affected by Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast, especially everyone in New York and New Jersey. Our prayers are with you. On another note, remember to vote early if you possibly can. If you don't go out and participate in early voting, please remember to get out to the polls on November 6th. The Interracial Colorism Project endorses President Barack Obama. I'm looking forward to another 4 years. We have a fantastic series of shows planned with guest speakers who are experts in the field, as well as other guests who will be appearing. The purpose of tonight's show is to give you a brief introduction of the Dynamics of Colorism, talk about the Interracial Colorism Project, and what we plan to do going forward. To begin with, the Interracial Colorism Project Incorporated is an actual project that I began, and it was developed to educate members of the community, whether it's in academia, in the sociology field, anthropology, psychology field, businesses, and just society as a whole, of the existence and the effects of colorism within the Black community. We plan on conducting research in which we'll focus in on the areas of personal, social, education, economics, employment and career, psychological issues that result from someone being a victim of colorism. We'll also look at the music industry and the media industry. Before we even begin to discuss colorism and how it's affecting Black Americans, we would really want to go back and look at the historical issues and where the colorism actually came from, its origins, its roots, why it's so prevalent in the Black community, and just have a good, hearty discussion on the topic and the areas in which it affects us on a daily basis. You know, colorism is actually a prejudicial treatment of individuals that are within the same racial group on the basis of their skin color. So, for example, you know, when we're talking about colorism, especially within the Black community, although I must really make sure that I say this, colorism occurs worldwide. It's in Latin America, it's in African countries, in India, and it's really just based on the fact whether or not someone's skin complexion is light, medium, or dark. And in my research for my dissertation, what I did find out, and this is really interesting, is that people who are within the same skin color group, so let's take, for example, two people who belong to the dark complexion, let's say a dark skin category group, they can and do discriminate against each other based on their skin color. So you can have two people who are dark complexion who do discriminate against each other based on the skin tone. And that's possible because in my study, what I used was a Black skin color identifying chart that I developed. And it's a representation of the skin tones of people within the Black race. There were 16 skin colors that I used for the light category, 16 for the medium category, and 16 for the dark category. So let's say, for example, we're looking at the chart, and there are two dark-complexioned people who one person may categorize their skin color at a D6, and someone else may categorize their skin color at a D, let's say, 14. It is possible for colorism, for a colorism issue to develop and exist between those two people, despite the fact they do belong to the same color group, skin color group. Now, everybody's probably aware of how colorism, its origins, where they come from, but we'll just do a brief overview tonight. The complexion issues that are existing right now, or we can say the colorism issues, can really be traced back to the slavery era. You know, there was a time when lighter complexion slaves were given preferential treatment over the dark complexion. We know from history and documents and reviews that the darker skinned slaves were often the slaves who worked in the fields, while the lighter complexion slaves worked in the house and had the easier tasks to perform. And what happened, you know, later on in other shows, we'll really go into detail about the historical origins of colorism, but we need to understand that it occurs interracially and intraracially. So when we're talking about it interracially, we're looking at someone who's outside of your of a particular racial group, of someone from a different racial group, rather, who is making a distinction as preferential treatment or prejudicial attitudes towards someone of another racial group based on their skin tone. And, you know, let me give you a good example. If you want to have to understand interracial colorism, we can look at a person who is perhaps, let's say, a white American, and look at someone who's a dark brown-skinned black American. With that white person making a comment, statement, or distinction about that darker complexion black person's skin tone constitutes interracial colorism. For example, the white person may say, when he's looking at maybe three or four different black people, and one person could be light complexion, one could be medium, and one could be dark. And if that person really said, you know what, I don't want that dark-skinned guy to work here. His skin is just too dark, and I just couldn't take looking at him. There you go. Boom. Interracial colorism. And the problem with that is that stems from slavery era, once again, as I stated earlier. You know, where we had this preferential and preferred treatment. I can tell you from experience at one point in time when I worked at a position, and the president of the actual organization walked in, and he had a real issue. This was a white American male who had an issue with black men who were very dark complexion. Originally, this is what I believed. And he walked up to me one day, and he made a comment. And he said, if you look at, let's just make up a fake name, we'll use John Doe. Look at John Doe. His skin is just so dark. He's so black. He just gives me the oof when I look at him. You know, and what's so sad about it, and rest assured that Dr. Colbert did immediately correct that issue with a no-nonsense approach, but what's so disturbing was that in this time and age that someone would actually say that to another black person when they didn't really know you that well. And whether they knew you that well or not, it's not the point. It's just inappropriate. It's not acceptable. So when situations like this arise, and you'll find out as we go on through later episodes in the show when we talk about colorism in the workplace, that the EEOC really will not tolerate this. They will investigate and address and handle claims based on color. And that's a whole other episode. And I can assure you it will be an exciting show, especially when we start talking about the effects of colorism in the work environment, because they can and they are detrimental. And not only is colorism just detrimental in the work environment, but if you really stop, everyone, and I'm serious, stop and just take a look at how it would feel if you were the other person or the other end or the end of the colorism act. We have people who are perpetrators and we have people who are victims. And for someone to treat you differently. And here's the thing. Let me back up a few seconds. For someone outside of your racial category, your racial group, to treat you differently because you're a black person, that's one thing. And it hurts, and it's wrong, and it's unacceptable in any shape, form, or fashion. But it really stings, and it really hurts when you have someone within your own racial group treating you adversely or differently or whatever you want to say because your skin is a specific color, shade, or tone. Or however you want to describe it, it's still wrong. And I believe strongly, and this is based on conversations, and we'll have some of the guests come on the show throughout the episode series and really listen to how detrimental and upsetting it is to have someone within your own racial group treating you differently just because your skin happens to be either light, dark, or medium. And something else that I really wanted to press home with, is hope that everybody's aware of, is that when you start looking at colorism and interracial colorism, meaning within the group of let's say, black Americans, within our own racial group, what is so alarming and disturbing everyone is that it's not just where you have a lighter complexion versus dark complexion. It can occur with light, medium, and or dark complexion individuals. When I conducted my study for my dissertation, my focus was looking at the occurrences of interracial colorism among black Americans in the workplace. And the data revealed that, yes, it did occur, light versus dark, and dark versus light, and even when there were some medium complexion people who experienced it. The bottom line is, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, as a race of people, black Americans, we must learn to come together. We have to figure out strategies, tactics, whatever it is that we need to figure out to do to hopefully eradicate colorism within our own community. We must push, this is an ugly, what I would like to call an ugly issue that affects us. A lot of people, a lot of black Americans really don't like you talking about it. They have issues about it. But there's been a plethora of research conducted on the occurrences of colorism within the black community. But I think we're at a point now where we need to have a sit-down conversation. We need to have conferences. We need to have dialogues, whether they're in the form of community roundtables or town hall meetings. But we must begin discussing colorism within our own community. It's not going to go away until you talk about it, address it, deal with it. Then perhaps we'll be able to move on. Now, I'm not proposing nor am I stating that colorism will be wiped off the face of the earth forever. No, because there's one researcher, and I do believe her name was Dr. Wilson, who was one of the authors of the book, The Color Complex, noted that as long as white racism exists, then there would be light complexion or light skin color preferences within the black American community. So what we plan to do throughout these episodes of The Dynamics of Colorism, through my research with the Interracial Colorism Project, is really get down and really investigate colorism. Let's look at it. Let's turn it inside out, upside down. The bottom line is we really need to make significant progress in moving forward with determining how we're going to continue to handle this issue within the black community. Now, that brings me to the Interracial Colorism Project. What I planned to do, or my goal was, or my dream rather, was when I started the Interracial Colorism Project, was to actually conduct, you know, have surveys, write research articles. But again, as I stated, the articles are great, the research is great, but we really need to look at what we're going to do to try and eradicate it. So that's the goal. what happened was, and let me go back to my prior point I was making about the origins of colorism, is that, you know, as a result of all of the preferential treatment during the slavery era and post-slavery and et cetera, what happened was Black Americans began to internalize this, the practice of the preferential treatment, or we could even say the prejudicial treatment, you know, all based, again, on the lightness or darkness of skin color among the race. Now, it's really sad because interracial colorism has played a significant role in the plethora of ills that exist, you know, within Black communities. And in 2012, with it still being an issue, it's bad because it continues to separate and it divides Black Americans. Now, we've been through enough, and when you think about the, let's put it this way, despite, you know, the plethora of insidious discriminatory acts that have been inflicted upon Black Americans throughout history, you know, acts of discrimination or preferential treatment by Black Americans against Black Americans, you know, based on skin color, are just as insidious. And this is something we must realize, and we have to deal with it. What we're doing is we're practicing the same preferential treatment that existed during slavery and then post-slavery, and you know, we get into that Reconstruction, civil rights, all of these attitudes or behavior towards someone because of their skin color is something that's been internalized to such a degree and such a magnitude that it really does cause harmful effects. So, you know, if you go back and think about it, in 1903, W.B. Du Bois, he wrote, "For the problem of the 20th century is still the problem of the color line." Well, everybody, in 2012, the problem of the 21st century is still the problem of the color line. And that is the preferential and prejudicial treatment that we as Black Americans, actually the things that we do to each other. Now, the whole purpose of me deciding to go out and embark on my interracial colorism project, because I see the need. I was a professor teaching at a college in the D.C. area, and throughout one of my courses, as an adjunct professor, let me correct myself, throughout the lecture one day in the classes, I brought up interracial colorism and started talking about it and explaining it to the students as part of my research. And the students were so interested and excited. They actually went wild because they said, "Dr. C, you just don't know how bad it really is. It's so much of this going on. It's really prevalent." And what interested me was the fact that my students, you know, in a college setting, in a classroom setting, were actually so driven to really discuss colorism, where a lot of them actually wanted to do their course projects on colorism rather than what I assigned. But it was interesting to see that they were not only interested in just having a dialogue about it, they were interested in finding out, well, why is it still here? You know, why are we still doing this to each other, and what is the point? And there's some really good books. And if you actually go to my website, the name of the project is the Interracial Colorism Project.com. I'm sorry, the website is colorismproject.com. I'm creating there a list, or practically putting together, when time allows, the literature in the field on colorism. And it's really some interesting material. You really want to read it. The most important, I think, really interesting piece of literature was written by Dr. Audrey Alyssa Kerr. Her dissertation, which she focused in on colorism, actually occurring in the Washington, D.C. area, and articles that she's written on the paper bag principle, in which they actually, which she actually went through, and she talked about the types of colorism tests that were believed to have been in practice during those times. So it's an excellent document. Her articles, her name is Dr. Alyssa Kerr, spelled K-E-R-R. You really should, if you have an opportunity, look at her book on the paperback principle. And I do believe I do have that name correctly. And then also, if you can get an opportunity, read her dissertation. It's so informative. And it's something that should really be read so that we can really understand about the issues and the practices. And the actual name is of the article is The Paper Bag Principle, Class, Colorism, and Rumor, and the Case of Black Washington, D.C. That's one of them. Excellent article. It's a must read. But when you really want to know more about colorism, I really think it's important to either purchase some of the books that are out there on it, just do historical research, look at some of the literature that I've provided on my website. There is information out there that we should read, and I think it's important to know the history of colorism, because before we can really move forward and truly, and I mean truly, focus in on trying to eradicate colorism and get rid of it, before we can do that, we really need to look at the history of it and see where it comes from, why it's here. And really, if you look at take a historical look at how it's affected Black Americans, and from a historical viewpoint, I think then once we see that and we see all of the horrendous and just terrible experiences that Black Americans have had to go through, then I think we'll get a better grasp on understanding why it's something that we must get rid of out of our community, out of the way we think, and our behavior, and our beliefs, and our positions. And it's really good to be informed. When you're informed, you read, you understand, then you can discuss it, and then move forward with deciding, okay, how do we as a race of people try to get rid of this ugly little gremlin that's been affecting us for eons? And now, in order to actually move forward, everyone, and really dig into this colorism issue within the Black community, what I did, I developed, you know, a series of projects that are going to focus in on colorism. Well, number one, we have the talk radio show, The Dynamics of Colorism. And the second area, which I worked put together, is a curriculum on colorism. You know, and it's a project that I developed. And the curriculum is really going to consist of a series of courses that can be taught to the K through 12th sector and into the college level even, where it's going to be something that's going to be effective for faculty and teachers to use, as well as for businesses and employers to use, because we must remember and understand that if someone is not aware that their preferential treatment and or behavior, you know, is a colorism act. If they don't know, they don't know. And they may be participating or displaying types of behavior in the workplace, in the classroom, playing with their friends, and they're not even aware that what they're doing is something that is really a serious issue that in the workplace EEOC will address and handle colorism claims. And the reason why I think the curriculum is super important is because not only is the curriculum something that can be used for children in elementary, middle, high school, or even adults at the college level, it's something that I believe strongly if we start implementing this into a curriculum in some sort of way in the school systems, perhaps we stand a better chance of moving away from actually having people become victims of colorism within the Black community. The other area where I think it's really instrumental will be in the workplace and training programs. I am currently conducting a survey on colorism and diversity, and the link is on my website, colorismproject.com, under the survey link. And the survey is really focusing in on whether or not employers have conducted diversity training that includes some form of or some information about colorism, about what it is. and how to handle it, how to address it. The issue is, are employers really informing employees as with sexual harassment will be investigated and be squashed? Colorism issues or complaints of colorism or acts and behavior will also be investigated and squashed. So I really think it's important, especially for employers, to understand that it is crucial that they include colorism in their training, whether it's just a basic training session where they're going to address it, where supervisors as well as managers are thoroughly trained and given a clear definition of what colorism is so that they understand it, so that they may recognize it in the event it should occur in their work environment and address it. And if any of you who are listeners have been victims of colorism in the work environment, you know, let the person know that it bothers you. You know, don't take it and turn your head and don't laugh it off. Because when you laugh things off like this, that gives someone the belief that, oh, she's okay with it or he's okay with it. Don't be okay with it. It's not funny. It's not a laughing matter. Address it. Deal with it. Report it to the Human Resource Department. Report it to your supervisor. And it's crucial because when the courts have heard cases involving colorism, what the justices are interested in, they're interested in, like, do you have evidence? Do you have proof? So if you have four people standing there and an act of colorism is, you know, takes place, you really need those witnesses. The problem is that a lot of people don't like getting involved in those workplace issues. But it is crucial. It is really crucial that you report it. It is crucial that you say, well, you know what, hey, I'm sorry that you don't want to be involved in this, but you are a witness. And if there's any form of retaliation because someone's a witness or because you reported it, the EEOC will handle that as well. At the end of the day, gang, it's important. What I did do also with the curriculum on colorism, I developed a series of case scenarios or little mini case studies actually involving colorism acts in the workplace, which can be used for training sessions, interactive sessions in the work environment, colleges or universities or even schools or teachers in training can use these little scenarios to be able to learn how to identify what constitutes an act of colorism, whether it's intraracial or interracial. Then we move on to my next project that I'm working on is a documentary on colorism. And the reason why this documentary is really important is because not only are we, again, focusing on the issues of colorism within the black community, but, you know, I'm looking at this geographically categorized by regions. I want to include interviews with people, of course, who are experts in the field, and interviews with individuals throughout the United States who've been either victims of colorism or at some point in time were perpetrators. The goal is to look at everyone throughout the United States. So this is a big, big project, which will take me probably, I think my estimated completion time was 2015. But the goal of the documentary is just to identify the regions and the individual states where colorism has and continues to plague the black community in a manner or even at just high rates when you see it occurring. And I am excited about working on the documentary, and I can't wait to hit the road and get in a little bus or something and just travel state to state and really make this a project that is not only going to be just meaningful to me, but something's going to add to the material in the field and something to give black Americans to say, look at what this has done. Don't you think that it's time we all come together, start the healing process, and then move forward? So I think the documentary will be fantastic. The other project that the Interracial Colorism Project is going to focus in on is that we are in the process of developing the Journal of Colorism Studies. And Sarah L. Webb, who is also involved with the Interracial Colorism Project, and she's also a blogger who blogs on colorism issues, and I just think it's phenomenal that she does that. Sarah is going to be our managing editor of the Journal on Colorism Studies, and she's at s.l.writes on Twitter, but if I'm incorrect, you can check it on the website. And she's going to be our managing editor of our Journal on Colorism Studies, because I think this is an area that really is really worth having its own journal, where we can really see, you know, information, documentation about the issues of colorism. I also wanted to get us to a point, and this is not with the journal, it's separate, of actually getting this, getting colorism issues, getting the information to the school systems and saying to them, you know, let's have a writing competition where your students write about colorism issues. You know, show them what it, explain to them what it is. Maybe it's a poetry competition where they write poems in which they talk about colorism, the effects of it. Or have a short story writing contest. But what we really need to do is start enlightening, especially our young people, that colorism is alive and well. And we need to address it and we need to talk about it. And perhaps going this route, we'll be able to eventually move toward not seeing it occur. We're also really going to look at colorism occurring on the college campuses and with the employers. You know, is it in social organizations? We've heard a lot of rumors and issues about it being in the music and the media industry. And I've noticed issues that we'll talk about later in the show. So I just think the Journal of Colorism is really going to be significant and really important and crucial to the Interracial Colorism Project. Then the other area where I was looking at exploring is we're actually going to hold webinars in an effort to raise funds to continue the Interracial Colorism Project going forward. Up until this time, I've been funding it myself. So we're going to start branching out, look for sponsors to get funding to keep this project up and going. Having said that, I think the webinars are going to be a great idea, where my upcoming webinar is going to be on colorism as a psychic prison. And that information will be available on the website also as well. And then the other project is having an actual community roundtable discussion, where we get people from the community, from all walks of life, to come together, and let's just have a panel and then have a discussion on colorism. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's a great way to begin this process of trying to get us to where we can identify or figure out how we can start the healing process and trying to train, enlighten, and educate people about the colorism issue. So I think the webinars would be phenomenal, where we would have people who are interested in it, who are experts in the field, who've conducted studies, and people in general. And see, this is something that I want everyone, all of my listeners, to understand, is that I am interested in talking to you and working with you and working with communities and groups and businesses and organizations on how we can get rid of colorism. So when we have community roundtable discussions, if you're someone who has a deep-seated, you know, interest in this, and you really need to have have people hear your voice, contact me, say, Dr. C, you know, I'd like to be involved in this. I would like the world to hear what I have to say. This isn't just about people who are researchers and experts in the field. It's about everyone and everyone's ideas, their thoughts, their opinions, their feelings, their beliefs. You count. Everyone here, I'm interested in everyone being able to come together and put it on the table and talk about it. So I encourage everyone, I'm not looking for you to just be a researcher, an expert. I'm looking for you, for John Doe, who's a college student, the graduate students, the employee. I'm looking for you to get involved, to come forward and say, this is what, hey, I want to work with this. It's interesting. I want to work at trying to help get rid of this. And I think that it's important for everyone to understand that that is the focus of the Interracial Colorism Project, bringing people together regardless of where, what your work of life, your education, your background. I want to bring everyone together, have everyone sit at the table, or however we're going to do it, and talk about this. And that is the only way we can begin the healing process. And in order to begin working at that, what I decided to do last month was to put together a committee and hold a conference on colorism. And we're in the planning stages. We know what we want to do. We know where we want to hold it at. It's just putting everything together and getting people to work as a team. And we're holding our first meeting on November 8th. And we're actually going to work toward moving forward with making this conference happen. The scheduled dates are November 14th through the 16th, 2013. And I'm looking at it taking place in Pikesville, Maryland. And the goal, again, of the conference is to bring everybody together. We'll have panel community roundtable discussions, panel discussions and presentations. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Audrey Alyssa Kerr, who wrote the paperback principle that I mentioned earlier. So I think the conference on colorism is something that needs to take place, has to take place, and it will take place. I am excited about putting it together, about working with an exceptional team of people who are interested and willing to get this conference up and going. We're in the planning stages, and we at this time we're also looking for sponsors for the conference on colorism. And information will be available on our website, and we'll be coming out email and regular mail to everybody soon. But one point I really do want to make is that I think we're at a point in history, in our lives, in the year, in the time, whatever you want to call it, that it's important for Black Americans to understand that we must learn to band together. We must learn to support each other. We've been resilient. We've dealt with so many horrendous acts that have been committed against us historically. I think it's time for us to come together as, you know, one united front, and sit down, putting all differences on the sidebar, and say, okay, this is about us healing. This is about us making progress and moving forward. This is about us standing together and looking at an issue that has plagued our community for so many years, and really trying to determine how we, as a race, as a group of people, how we can actually decide on what needs to be done to get rid of this little ugly monster. I'm not proposing that it can be done overnight, but if we begin to work together, we can begin to heal. It takes patience, it takes work, it takes commitment, and it takes unity. And I really believe that we can get there if we just work together and remember, put everything on the sidebar and then move forward. So that's my intro tonight, introducing you to the dynamics of colorism. Oh, and one thing I did leave out, everyone, is that what I've also did, I wrote a play that was titled Colorstruck, and this play is really about a light-complexion Black woman who's married to a dark-complexion Black male, and she's color-struck. Well, she has twin daughters. One's named Ebony, and one is named Ivory. And she really treats Ebony horribly throughout her entire life. Well, throughout the dialogue of this play, Colorstruck, the characters, through dialogue, are providing historical origins, and they're talking about colorism tests. They're talking about how horrible colorism was in a time and place years ago and how it affected the characters individually. That play will be the entertainment during the conference. I think it's the first night of the conference or the second night of the conference. It'll be the entertainment, the social outing event. And hopefully everyone will like it, but the point of the play is that it has a message, and the message is clearly saying, you know, and it's a beautiful poem in there that I wrote also, and I just love the poem, and it's significant, it makes a point, and it basically says in so many words that it doesn't really matter the color of somebody's skin. And I just love that actual poem, and I'm going to read it to you as soon as I realize where I filed it away at. But I think the poem is something that it's interesting. It's titled, Can't You See? And this is a poem that the daughter Ebony in the play actually reads to her mother when she's selected as class valedictorian. Instead of reading a speech, she says this poem to her mother, and it's really poignant. Can't you see? I may be black, but I am beautiful. From the crown of my head to the soles of my feet. I am not the lightest of light or the brownish of brown. I am the darkest of dark, as you can see. It doesn't matter what you say or how you code my skin. What matters most is the soul inside and the beautiful dreams within. So it doesn't matter that I may not be the lightest of light or the brownish of brown. I am the darkest of dark, and I like what I see. I am somebody with a warm soul inside, with dreams as big can be. I am somebody, but not because of the color of my skin, but for the beautiful soul that resides within. I am black, and I am beautiful. Can't you see? That's my poem. And it's in the play, and I think you'll love it. It's poignant. It's straight to the point. It has a really good message. So, everybody, I want to first thank you for tuning in tonight. This is all that I have for tonight's show. I am looking forward to tuning in with you live here from Windsor Mill, Maryland, every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a fabulous lineup of shows. I like talking about the good, bad, and the ugly, and the controversial. The show topics are listed on the website. So please feel free to visit my website, colorismproject.com. You can find me on Twitter at colorismproject. And I look forward to you guys tuning in next week. And once again, thank you for tuning in to the Dynamics of Colorism. I am your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may contact me at 800-905-2136, or you may email me at drculbreth@colorismproject.com, and I'll spell my last name. It is C-U-L. B like in boy, R-E-T-H. And I'm looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Until then, please remember, dare to be different and dream in color. This is Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, signing off for the Dynamics of Colorism. Good night, everybody. Have a safe week and a wonderful weekend.